Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and on this podcast, we shake up your sexual world, baby. That one's not going to stick. Come on over to PleasureMechanics.com and check out our complete podcast archive. And while you're there, do yourself a favor and sign up for one of our free mini courses at PleasureMechanics.com/free. And we'll start delivering our best sex advice and favorite podcast episodes straight to your inbox. When you are ready to master new erotic skills, be sure to check out our premium multimedia online courses so we can guide you stroke by stroke in mastering new erotic skills like couples massage, foreplay mastery, anal play, erotic spanking, kinky sex, and more. Use the code Speaking of Sex for 20% off the online course of your choice. On today's episode, we are going to be tackling the gargantuan topic of gender. Sex and gender go hand in hand, but what is gender? What does it mean to be transgender, cisgender, genderqueer, gender fluid, gender nonconforming?
Oh my, oh me.
Gender is in the news a lot recently. It's something we're finally really talking about as a culture, but it can get a little confusing. And what is its relationship to sexuality? This is a humongous topic, and we are not going to be able to do it justice in one episode, but we wanted to give you kind of a gender primer and help you understand some of the language that's being used around gender nowadays so you can become more sexually literate, as we like to call it, and help educate your communities when these topics come up. But we also want to talk about how gender impacts your sex life and how the freedom that is emerging around gender can benefit you, even if you are the most traditional man or woman you know. There is freedom in this for all of us. There is creativity and power in the conversation around gender. So let's dive in. And this is something I'm really passionate about. It was a central thing I studied in college, at Vassar College. I focused on sexuality and gender. I love reading about it. I love talking about it. I love living my life as a gender nonconforming individual, and I'll tell you more about what that means to me. It's something I'm really excited to share with you, and I think we've avoided it maybe because it is such a big topic, but it feels really relevant, and we want you to have an understanding of how gender plays out in our life. So we're gonna just brush the surface today and start the conversation. And if you're interested or have specific questions, email us and we can tackle more specifics in future episodes. Okay, so what is gender?
Over to you, honey.
The word gender comes from the same root as genus, and it means type. It's a way of sorting people. So first and foremost is there's a difference between biological sex and gender identity. Sex is the male-female sorting of people based primarily on what your genitals look like on the outside at the time of birth. And most of us have this very simplistic sense of there's boys and girls, men and women, and that's your sex and your gender. What's the difference? It turns out that even the biological story is not so simple. About 1 in 100 people are born intersex, somewhere in between the binary, the two-type system of male and female. And there are many different ways your chromosomes can present. So it's not just XX and XY. You can be XXY, XXYY. There's, I think, 5 known variants and possibly more. And the ways that we classify boys and girls, men and women, it's not just about penis and clitoris. It's about ovaries and testicles, and some people have penis and ovaries. Some people have all these different combinations. We used to call them hermaphrodites, but we now use the word intersex. And beyond that, there is a spectrum of hormones and ways people present during and after puberty. And so it's very beneficial to open your mind up to there not being two biological sexes, But there is a range of how humans present, and this is true within the whole animal kingdom as well. So we will leave that very complicated topic there. There's not just boys and girls. There's a range. And for most of history, when a baby has been born with any sort of ambiguous genitalia, non-consensual genital surgery was done to those individuals to make them fit one of these two categories, whether or not they chose that, whether or not the parents sometimes even consented to that. And so our culture has been so fixated on there being two types of people, men and women, that we have done harm to those individuals that's a natural variant of those two categories in order to maintain that two-type binary system. Okay. You're going to have to reel me
there's
in.
There's so much to say about
that. So much to say about all of this.
Some of you might feel mind-blowing already.
Okay. So, first, biological sex is not two types, and it does not then necessarily correlate with your gender identity. So when we tend to think that people born with penises grow up to become boys, and people born with vulvas grow up to be girls, and we all know exactly what that means, right? Well, again, turns out not so simple. So your gender identity is the way you outwardly present yourself to the outside world to signal your belonging with a certain group of people. Now, going way back in history, this became a very fixed, binary, biologically determined thing with the rise of capitalism and private ownership. Before that, in most tribal, communally property-owning societies, there was a much more fluid sense of gender. When we go into property ownership as a human society, the sorting of people into two types of people becomes much more important. Why? Because we needed to create a hierarchy. We needed to create rules around who could own what, who could perform which jobs. And those rules start narrating our gender. So gender is everything about what clothes you wear, what roles you perform in society, your personality traits you are encouraged or discouraged to perform. One of the major gender theorists, Judith Butler, calls gender a performance. And this is a way of thinking about all of the things we do to present our gender being something we do, we put on, not who we are as this fixed, inherent thing. It is a cultural construction. Meaning, a little human baby with a penis born in one culture at one time is expected to do, wear, say, think, behave differently than another baby human born with a penis in another culture. The way we perform gender is culturally constructed. This is a life-changing, game-changing idea to embrace because it reveals how much of how we live our lives is guided, shaped, and dictated by the time, place, and culture we're born in. To further complicate it, it's not just about being born in America in 1980, for example. My gender was very much dictated by my race, my class, my geographical location within the United States. We have many cultures within each culture, and gender is performed within those microcultures. So what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man, what it means to be a boy or a girl is very much dictated by your specific set of cultures. And you don't have to go further than the kids' clothing section of any major department store to see this in action. Look at around the age, you know, when you're babies, we have the color differences and some little differences, but at around 2 or 3 years old, look at the clothing differences and you start seeing gender performativity in action. The girls' clothes, pink, ruffles, sparkly.
Daddy's little girl, princess.
Little princess in training. Like all sorts of language around preciousness, cute, beautiful, like all of the messages there. Go to the boys section and it's sports, violence. You get guns, you get camo, you get dinosaurs and the implied violence of dinosaurs. You get all sorts of science, rockets. The professions of the male gender start presenting themselves on our little kids' clothing. And there have been studies about how babies are held and babies are touched and babies are talked to, depending on if people think they're a boy or a girl. Oh, it's a girl. How sweet. She's so precious. She's so beautiful. Oh, a boy, you're going to be big and strong one day. And as enlightened and as progressive as we think we are, these gender normative behaviors are completely intact in our culture. What we expect out of boys and girls is different. And all of these subtle messages, from how you're treated as a little baby in hell, to what you're dressed in as a toddler, to what toys you are given, to what's encouraged of you and what's discouraged, starts to shape how you present to the world. You start noticing what the adults around you, how they're presenting their gender and what's normative there, how they're encouraging you to develop, and your gender grows up with you, and you start performing your gender to fit in to society. And this is how gender normativity works. It's a set of expectations, it's rewards and punishments, it's what's condoned and condemned, and all of these systems around us that tell us how to be and how to act in order to fit in. But then there are the outliers, and throughout history, there have always been the people who they feel they are, who they know themselves to be, is so different from the norms around them that they can't help but not fit in. And some of us try to fit in and then just fail so spectacularly at fitting in that we just have to declare ourselves outsiders. And in different cultures at different times, this is more or less dangerous. So think about a boy who's born with a penis, and as they're being raised as a boy, all they want to do is play with their sister's dolls. They want to put on the frilly, sparkly clothes. They want to dance. They want to be more like their sisters than like their brothers, right? Like the way they feel they want to fit in does not match their outside body, and it doesn't match what people are telling them they should be. And often when we hear these stories, there is a tremendous amount of punishment, violence, subtle and not so subtle motivation to conform, to be someone different. And for some people, those motivations or punishments are enough to kind of push them a little bit more towards being more like a boy, more like a girl that they are supposed to be. But for other people, there's not anything and any force in the world that can change who they feel that they are. And these people have always existed amongst our cultures as gender outliers. And there's great stories throughout history, throughout different cultures, of people who have disrupted their gender norms and chosen to live across those boundaries. So in the time where women could never become doctors, like that was just not even expected or allowed. Women couldn't go to school, let alone go into the higher education to become a doctor. We have stories of women who have left their hometowns, who have transformed themselves into men, who have worn fake phalluses, cut their hair, and hidden themselves amongst men to become doctors, and then were like prolific doctors with all of these, you know, wonderful accolades until they were discovered to be women. And that's just one example. There's tons of examples of people who have lived outside the gender norms of their culture and time. So this brings us into the spectrum of gender. And along the spectrum, we have a lot of different identities and languages that people are using to talk about this gender difference. So people who are transgender, trans meaning across or other, have identified who they believe themselves to be does not match their external body, and they choose to take steps to become the other gender. Right? So you are born and assigned male at birth, you feel yourself to be a woman, And at some point, and this is happening younger and younger, but at some point during childhood, puberty, adolescence, adulthood, even into late adulthood, we know people have transitioned in their 50s and 60s. At some point in your life, you take steps to cross over, to transition into living and being the other gender, the gender you believe yourself, you know yourself to be on the inside. Transgender people can or cannot get medical interventions. They can or cannot go on hormones. They can get or do not have to get genital surgery, breast augmentation, either taking breasts away or putting breasts on, facial reconstruction. There's a huge range of medical interventions that can assist this process of transitioning. And so one of the big myths that people have, it's like, well, have you had the surgery yet? Or, you know, people want to know about transgender people, kind of how their body reflects their social gender.
Specifically, people want to know about what's going on with their genitals.
Yes.
Because we've become so focused on gender being represented by genitals.
Right. And this question is, A, very invasive, and, you know, that's private. You don't ask other people about their genitals, like, hey, do you have big, thick labia? You know, you don't ask that unless you're very intimate with someone. But it turns out to be a misleading question because there is no one surgery. There are lots of different steps people can take in any different combination to help them feel more comfortable in their body and so that their body aligns with the gender they feel they want to express. And access to these medical procedures is very much narrated by class and access to medical care. And so it's not really even about which surgeries or procedures or hormones you want to have. It's what you want to have and what is available to you financially and culturally. And I think that's really important. And the core here, and again, there's so much more to say about transgender people. Charlotte and I have both been in relationships with transgender people. We love trans community dearly. I myself considered transitioning at some point in college and chose not to. But there's a lot more to say here, is what I'm saying. But I think the core that we want to talk to you about is respect. And the idea that each of us gets the freedom, and we're now arriving at a place culturally where we each have the freedom to choose what gender to present to the world, to choose what pronouns to use, how we want to be treated and addressed, what public places we are able to access, based on our own choice of gender, our own feelings of who we are as individuals. And there's no medical procedure or no litmus test of who is valid as a man or valid as a woman. We can all make the choice to respect every individual's gender identity as they say it is. And so this creates a lot of hysteria in culture, and I'll get to the political reasons about why later, I think. But it creates a lot of hysteria of, like, there's going to be men in women's bathrooms. No, if you walk into a woman's bathroom, you are identifying as a woman, and there is no measure of who should be allowed to go into that bathroom. And the fear-mongering that happens around this says that that is a threat to women and girls, that there would be men in women's bathroom if we allow trans people to use the bathroom of their choice. Trans people are not a threat. There has never been a recorded incident of a transgender person creating any sort of crime or violence in a public bathroom. That's a myth. The threat is to the trans people because of the hysteria they confront when they enter a bathroom that other people might not think they belong in. The threat is someone who is presenting feminine, who is presenting as a woman, going into the men's bathroom because they still have a penis and being victimized in that space. Trans people are the ones being done violence onto the trans people. They're not the ones doing the violence. And so all of the fear-mongering around bathrooms and trans people is complete subterfuge for patriarchy and misogyny and violence against women. Trans people are not a violent population that it's going to victimize anyone in the bathroom. They're just trying to pee. Okay, so transgender people are people who choose to step over the scripts, the gender normative boundaries of our culture in order to align how they present socially with how they feel inside and take certain steps to make that happen. And that can be any range of medical and non-medical interventions. Then there is a group that identifies as gender queer, gender fluid, gender nonconforming. And that's where I have found my happy home within the gender spectrum. So for us, it's not about transitioning and aligning with the other gender along a binary. It's more about occupying a space in between and allowing our social presentation to reflect the complexity of the gender spectrum and the ways that we are some unique cocktail of both. And for me, so I present a little bit masculine. I wear my head closely shaved. I wear male clothes. I've got big, broad shoulders. I've got lots of muscle on my body. And I socially present as masculine in a lot of ways, in the ways I interact with people. For me, I reject masculinity and femininity as a concept. I believe that this concept, the entire construct of male, female, masculine, feminine, is basically a power construct that has been used as a tool of patriarchy and misogyny. It's about creating two buckets, one who has more social and financial power, and the other who is subservient. And all of the constructs around masculine and femininity, all the ways we talk about gender, serve that construct. And I think it's time we end it. And so when people say, oh, you're a masculine woman, I'm like, well, what does that mean? Well, you're assertive in conversation and you're not afraid to speak your mind. And so by naming those qualities as masculine, what we're doing is saying men are more assertive and men speak their mind. Women don't. And as long as we call that quality masculine, we are privileging men in those qualities. Or if they say, oh, but you're kind of feminine, why? Well, you really love cooking. So again, we're asserting that a woman's place is in the kitchen just by naming this quality masculine or feminine. And as long as we maintain this language, we're maintaining the power structure that it supports. And I think it's time we just end that and we say, I'm a human, I have a vulva, and I love cooking, I love playing with kids, but I'm also really assertive in language, I love speaking in front of crowds. I'm not very good with tools. I couldn't fix a flat tire for shit, you know, but I can write really well. Like, we each have a constellation of qualities that make us individuals and who we are, and then physical qualities that we emphasize some and downplay others. Like, I have large breasts, but I don't wear a bra and I don't present them as cleavage. Like, I just wear them in my shirt. But I also don't choose to bind them close to my chest and minimize them. Someone else with the very same size breast could play them up and present them as cleavage, could play them down and constrict them. We all have these choices of what we do with our individual bodies and body parts to communicate something to the world. And the way I walk around the world communicates something about me, but I'm not trying to belong to the boys' club or the girls' club. And for me, and a lot of other gender nonconforming, gender fluid, gender queer, we use all these different languages to kind of talk about subtleties along this spectrum. Like, someone who's gender fluid might feel more feminine one day and more masculine the next day, and I like to play with different kinds of presentation where I kind of dress the same every day. So I call myself gender queer instead of gender fluid. For me, there's a lot of power in straddling that boundary. It's a great source of joy for me and a great source of freedom for me because there's a lot less expectations on how I'm supposed to behave. And I can flirt with everyone with equal confidence. Like, I will flirt with a gay man from this place of, like, I belong. In the same way I'll flirt with a queer woman, in the same way I'll flirt with a straight woman. And
or a straight man.
Or a straight man. And that is the most disarming. Like, they don't expect that. Or when people hear that I've had a lot of sex with men, gay and straight, in my life, that throws them for a loop, because what I'm showing with my gender identity doesn't line up with what their expectations of heterosexuality looks like. And that really throws people off guard, which I enjoy. I enjoy that disruption. Whew, so much to say here. Again, going back to respect, the interactions I have walking around in the world, I get sirred all the time. So a cashier ringing me up will say, you know, that'll be $10.48, sir, and then look up, and as I'm handing my credit card over and I smile, they realize that I am, quote, a woman, and so they get really flustered. And the range is, oh, I'm sorry, to people making big dramatic scenes about it and apologizing and feeling like they've done me some big offense. And we don't have to be so hysterical about it. What we need to do is respect people's chosen pronouns, their chosen presentation, and when in doubt, ask. Or when in doubt, use non-gendered language. And so if you encounter someone who's genderqueer and you're in a relationship of any kind, of friendship, coworker, it's okay to say, hey, by the way, what pronouns do you prefer? Or how do you like to be called? Because most people who are genderqueer know that they're genderqueer in some way, and so it's not a disrespectful question to ask them that. If they are showing you their masculinity or femininity in a very strong way, if they are wearing ties, if they are wearing dresses, you could default to what you assume their pronoun is, even if they're wearing a tie and have breasts underneath. Or again, just ask the question, like, hey, do you prefer he or she or they? And just recently, they was accepted into the dictionary as a singular pronoun. And this is a tremendous moment, because before it was grammatically incorrect to use they. And I come across this in our writing all the time when I'm writing about someone's lover. It's really awkward to say he or she or they or his or her. But if I can just use they, it's just a human. Their sandwich. It's not his sandwich or her sandwich. It's their sandwich. And we don't need to guess. And so using gender-neutral language, gender-neutral pronouns, is a way of showing respect to genderqueer people. When in doubt, either ask or use gender-neutral language until they correct you, until they give you their preferred pronouns. And we've become accustomed to doing this casually in language. A lot of people will casually give you clues about how they want to identify, and then respect that. And don't have gossipy chatter around, well, are they really a man? Are they really a woman? What do they have in their pants? Have they had the surgery? Like, that's none of your business. Until you're close enough that they'll disclose that really private information to you, all you need to do is respect what they're telling you about themselves and celebrate being in this wider spectrum of gender choice. Like, we have arrived as a culture to this place of having multiple options. And so if you are born with a uterus, it no longer means you have to be a wife, you have to be a mother, you have to stay at home and do the dishes. Like, that's how it used to be. It used to be so prescriptive that really, especially women, had one option for surviving in this world, or they were outcast, shunned, and had no chance at social success. We have come so far from that, and yet we have so far to go to truly understand and celebrate and be in the glory of our true diversity. Like, human beings are really special in that we're not just reflective of our sexual dimorphism. Like, we don't just have sperm and eggs, uterus and penis, and we're not restricted by that biological binary. And for me, there's something spiritual in allowing the diversity to come forward and show the true range of what human beings can be. And maybe the answers to a lot of our global problems are in that diversity, in all of the ways that we like to present ourselves and then choose mates based on this beautiful galaxy of genders. Or something. So I feel like there's just so much more to say about especially the political and power the stakes of gender. Like, why do Republicans get so hysterical about transgender people? Transgender people, there's not that many of us. And there's no real threat to, like, the social economic system except for the disruption of male privilege, of male power, of saying those people born with a penis shall have access to more power and wealth than those people born without a penis. Because as long as we can transition, as long as we can choose, as long as those lines are more fluid, that system is undermined. And so the real hysteria is not about transgender people in a bathroom. Like, that is a fear-mongering tactic. The real hysteria is the loss of male privilege and power and the distribution of wealth across gender lines and the distribution of power. Trump calling Hillary Clinton a nasty woman in that final debate was not just, like, a character assessment. It was his, like, vitriol against a woman standing in a place of equal power to him and the possibility of his ego. Okay, I'm getting into Trump. Hold me back. Those political discourses are about power and money and wealth and not about anything else, really. And the choice to disrupt the gender binary, the choice to celebrate and respect individuals who walk between those binaries, who choose to transition, who reveal to us the cultural construction of these two buckets of human beings. There are men and there are women, and they are different types of people who belong in different professions, who have different qualities. There are two and only two, and that is it. Like, that dialogue is ending, and it is scary for the people who have been benefited the most by that binary. Like, those are the people that are panicking right now. And the rest of us have a lot to benefit from the opening up of these gender categories. And this is a whole nother podcast, maybe, but I want to leave you with a challenge. So whatever your gender presentation is like, and I'm assuming that most of you are men or women and were raised as boys or girls and, like, know, have always known what you are, and, like, there's probably a smattering of us genderqueer folks listening. Hey! Hey, family! But for the rest of you, think about two things. I want to leave this podcast with two challenges. One, think about one thing that really you have always wanted to do that you have been held back doing by your assigned gender. What is one quality? What is one activity? What is one social interaction that you have always wanted to do that you feel like comes from within you that has been interrupted by being called a boy or a girl? Just reflect on that. And as you think about it, you might come up with a list. Then think about one thing in bed, one thing sexually you've always kind of wanted to do, wanted to try, but have not had access to that experience because of your gender. And just think about that. And I would love to hear these. If you want to email us at beintouch@pleasuremechanics.com, come over to pleasuremechanics.com/hello. I would love to hear some of your gender stories and what you have felt restricted around by your assigned gender. Because what this will reveal is that all of us are held back by the system. All of us are put into constraints and told that certain parts of us are good and certain parts of us are bad, and we should be more like this and less like that. And as this system is breaking down, we will all find more freedom to be our true selves in all of that messy, creative intricacy. And as we are more of who we are, we can offer ourselves to the world more fully. And we can have relationships that are more meaningful and more authentic because they encapsulate, they hold all of who we are and all of who we desire. And I think I'll end there. So, oh, cisgender. By the way, you'll also be starting to see the term cisgender around. And what does cisgender mean? Cisgender means the rest of you. If you identify with the biological sex assigned at birth, you are cisgender. C-I-S gender. Cis means same. And so this was a response out of the transgender community in response to always being othered. Like, we are all normal. You guys are the weird ones. You guys are the problems, but we're normal. The language of cisgender reflects that we all have a gender identity, and it all has a relationship to our biological sex, to our bodies, to what's reflected on the inside and the outside. And so you can use the language cisgender to identify along this spectrum of gender identity. So you're born as assigned as a girl, you have a vulva, you have breasts, and you feel like a girl, you feel like a woman. Great, you're cisgender. And that puts you kind of in the club and identifies your privilege as well. But it opens up the language so it's not like normal and other. It's more inclusive. We all have a gender identity and we can all use more specific language to name them. That makes sense? Okay, so I'm all riled up. There's much more to say. We'd love to hear your questions, how you're interacting. Maybe down the line we'll do another podcast specifically about how gender and sexuality interact and how gender plays out in the bedroom, because there's a lot to say there, including the hierarchy of orifices and how homosexuality is related to giving and receiving and all sorts of things like that. The relationship of femininity and passivity and receptivity. And
I think we've talked about some of that in the Shattering the Greatest Myth podcast that we did a long time ago. So if you're interested in more on that subject, check out that podcast.
Great. And we will link to that episode and a few others where we've touched on gender in our show notes page. We'd love to hear from you. What are your questions? How do you want to keep this conversation going? We love to hear from you in general. You can always be in touch at pleasuremechanics.com. You didn't say much this episode.
Well, you had a lot to say. You are fired up. This is really personal and an area of great importance. And I feel like you were speaking about it beautifully. Sure, there's ways I could pipe in, but I feel like you're in a flow. Right. No need to. I'll chat in other episodes.
In another episode, I'd like to hear what your experience of being with gender nonconforming partners is.
Mm.
Because many of your long-term partners have been gender nonconforming individuals.
That's true. Yes.
Why do you choose us?
Yes, I like you. I like the in-between space.
And then like this one really random, very straight, very heterosexual, very masculine dude got thrown in the mix. Yeah. A couple of those, actually.
Yeah, I like that brand, too, of men. But when I first met him, he was wearing a miniskirt. Mm. It was at a fancy dress party, Halloween. So it got my interest. I need some kind of... Anyway.
A little bit of bend, yeah. You're straight. All right. Hi, I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are your pleasure mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.
I'm saying your pleasure
mechanics. I know, I noticed that.
It's we are sweet. The pleasure mechanics. We are your pleasure mechanics. We are here for you. Be in touch. Mwah. Ciao.